This is Jellybone.
Cool. Splendid stuff. That is how Jellybone used to start, with raspberries. And one of the people who was starting it was Gene Davis, and another was Therese Birch. And over this next half an hour or so, we're going to find out how Jellybone used to be. Gene, first of all, how did it all start out?
Well, first of all, there was a children's programme every afternoon as part of At Home, the sort of last half hour of At Home. And I'd always wanted to have Saturday morning for the children's spot. And I think the first children's phone-in ever on radio was on a bank holiday Monday. I think it was George Gale who was doing the programmes during
George
the week.
George Gale?
No,
oh,
he was
I see.
Doing
yeah,
the programmes during the week.
Yes.
And so it had to be something else for the bank holiday. And so somebody said, well, you know, we'll have a children's phone-in. And I said, well, I don't think children will phone-in. Nobody's ever had a children's phone-in before. What will they talk about? And, you know, there it was 3 hours, and it was a bit worrying. But then the phone calls came, and they rang up and told jokes. And it seemed the most natural thing in the world. And you suddenly realise that a knock-knock is an absolute perfect thing on radio.
Now, why did it end up being called Jellybone? People always ask this.
Well, there were lots.
Is this your
we
idea?
Tried all the rhyming slang words. No, we had lists of them, you know, like saucepan lids for kids and all sorts of London words that one could
saucepan
do.
Saucepan lids.
Anything. And then I went away for a couple of days and I came back and somebody had decided that Jellybone was rhyming slang for telephone. So I never discovered who it was.
Ah, I'm not sure that it is, but it sounds
right.
Oh, no,
it wasn't. Certainly wasn't. But it sounds great.
Jellybone, yes. Now, Therese, you had to go through the Jellybone bit of the jokes and knock-knocks as well.
Absolutely.
I say had to go. I mean,
I enjoyed it.
You obviously did. The two of you and were often in hysterics.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, imagine having a job where on Saturday morning people ring you up and tell you funny stories. But, Therese, did you find that people think of you as a joke lady? Because I found for weeks after even I'd finished Jellybone, people would come up to me in parties and things and say, oh, I've got a good one to tell you.
Yes, it was obviously the most memorable part of the programme at that time. It was usually adults as well, it seems to.
Oh, yes.
Yes, been most impressed by it all.
But what if you got a joke that wasn't very funny? I mean, did you feel you had to be polite and laugh anyway?
No, I didn't really.
Yeah. You've just both incredible senses of humour.
I think I've got an appalling memory. I don't remember if somebody told me a joke 5 minutes ago. So when somebody rings in and says, why did the chicken cross the road? I think I've genuinely forgotten why the chicken crossed the road. So when I get the answer, it comes as a nice surprise.
Mm.
And so it's really not very difficult to laugh.
Right. Now, if you've got any good jokes at home then, and you're of the... What sort of age group was it then? It was a bit younger than Jellybone is now, wasn't it? I mean,
mainly. What would 9, 10?
9, 10. If that's your age at the moment, you've got a guaranteed laughing audience here of Therese and Jean. You can call us. Look, they're laughing already.
Just practicing.
01 353 8111 if you've heard any good jokes recently. Now, another of the highlights of Jellybone was the non-joking side of it, Mr. Nasty, as he liked to be called. Now, we had to keep you three apart, really, because I know that you've had your differences in the past with Mr. Nasty, so I took him away to a separate studio and had a brief conversation with him to try and get a message from Mr. Nasty to his former colleagues. Mr. Nasty!
What are you doing here, Clive? Bull. What are you going to ask me? Come on, hurry up, I'm in a hurry.
This is one of the troubles with Mr. Nasty.
Ask me a question.
You can never get a word in edgeways.
Go on, hurry up.
First of all, I wonder if...
I've got to go in a minute. I've got important things to do.
I have important people joining me shortly in the studio. Therese and Gene Davis now.
Hope they're not coming in.
They are. They're ever so nice. There's nothing wrong with Therese and Gene Davis.
Oh, I'm going before they get here.
You don't seem to like girls very much.
No. Girls?
Yeah.
I like everybody, me, because everybody likes me.
I think you're a little bit unfair.
All I happen to know is that boys is better than girls. I've always argued that, and I've always won the argument, because I'm the world's greatest arguer.
Well, why aren't you here now, then?
What are you doing here, anyway?
10 years later.
Who let you in?
I'm asking the questions.
Go on, then, ask me why. I've been waiting for a decent question for the last half hour.
Okay,
then. Why I came in the first place.
How are you going to celebrate 10 years of Jellybone?
10 years? Celebrate? Listen, I'll tell you something. this radio station started at rock bottom, and it's been going downhill ever since. Celebrate? Oh, I shall be listening to something decent.
What sort of things did you do then when you were working with Gene and
Therese? Ah, well, I was the only decent thing on this radio station. You realise everybody listened to LBC because of me. It was the nastiest station in the world.
I don't think it was.
And that's all that people wanted to listen to. So when I went, well, that was it, wasn't it?
But it was that nice Gene Davis and Therese and the jokes.
Nice! You could pong them all over London when they were sitting in front of a microphone. No one wanted to listen to them. It was only me what they wanted to listen to. And they did, because I used to argue with people and I would win arguments. Everything that I said, like the sun was cold, people would ring in and try and argue against me, and I would win, because I'm the world's greatest.
The sun was cold.
Is, not was.
Was?
Is
cold.
You obviously didn't
listen,
you idiot. Idiot can tell you're less than 10. How old are you? When's your 9th birthday? About time.
Yes, I started listening to Jellybone about the same time, I suspect.
Well, it didn't go in, obviously. It didn't make any difference to you. I mean, look at you.
No, the sun is...
What are you talking about? Really gone downhill.
Sun
I tell
cold.
You, I mean, I thought Gene Davies was... Excuse me.
I don't think you should...
Oh, the mention of that name. Oh, and what was that other one called?
How can you be
Therese?
So rude?
Oh dear, makes me wince just to think of the memories. What about all these nice LBC listeners? I'm saying something now, go on.
What about all these nice LBC listeners that are celebrating 10 years? They've been ever so nice about
nice?
The station.
They've been listening to this rubbish for 10 years. Not nice, that's not my word for it.
Are you an LBC listener then?
What's it stand for?
London Broadcasting Company.
Oh, that! Yes, we get that on our dustbin.
What about competitions? Did you have competitions and prizes and
things
like that?
Yes, and I would always win, I'm the world's greatest, you see,
and
everything.
What's your idea of a nice prize? A bottle of champagne or something like LBC T-shirt, was it?
Well, I used to give away nice things like worms and snails.
That doesn't sound very nice at
all. Oh, they were great! Everybody likes playing with a worm. Do you play with yours?
No. Have you got a message for Therese and Gene, Mr.
Darcy? Message?
Yes,
I have. Hello, Therese. Hello, Gene. What's your name?
Get lost.
Mr. Nasty, it's been nasty having you in the studio.
Well, I can't say what a pong it's been for me. I'm off now. I'm not staying another minute.
Oh, that's lovely.
That was great.
Brings back the memories, does it?
Yes, I'd forgotten how noisy he was, didn't you?
Yes, today? Absolutely.
I mean, there were times when he used to somehow fill the studio, and he used to bring in lots of recording tape and tie it round your neck while you were trying to speak and things like that.
And he had a remarkable ability of persuading you, literally, that the sun is cold and you could live out in the garden instead of in the house.
Very convincing,
kind of
yes.
Yes, he was quite logical, actually.
We don't need food.
It's quite, he's very clever in his arguments. Very
and noisy.
And noisy.
Yes. Well, just to prove that you had that sort of trouble as well, we have a brief recording of Gene taking on the very same Mr. Nasty.
LBC, where Mr. Nasty is worse!
Go away. I've got to make the announcements first. I've got to say that this is Mr. Nasty's Jellybone Jury time, and Mr. Nasty is going to be playing his nasty music. And if you want nasty music. And if you want to ring in and tell him what you think of it, the number to dial is 353-8111. But I can't imagine why anybody wants to talk to Mr. Nasty. I really find it very
difficult.
Of course
they do. Everybody likes my music because it's fantastic, and we're going to choose the worst Mr. Nasty record from all year, and you can listen to some of your old favourites again, like Nasty Action, Pinball Nasty, Colonel Nasty, Nasty Vibrations, and you can vote for them just like you do on Jellybone Jury, and we'll show them that our records are much, much better. I mean, they were awful, weren't they? I mean, they were really bad this week.
I thought they were very nice.
So there were Jellybone juries as well in those days.
Jellybone juries and Jellybone quizzes.
Jellybone record of the week.
Jellybone record of the week, yes. Always played at the end.
That's right. Phone-in guest quite often, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a little special quiz, Therese, which we've dug out of the archives, which is quite amazing, actually. This was something that you arranged. You're looking confused.
I am feeling confused.
Behind the birthday cake, we'll light the candles for that in a minute, I see a very confused-looking Therese. Have a listen to this. This was a very special quiz that you arranged.
My name's Therese Birch.
Over the last few weeks, you will have heard about LBC's Tower of London sound competition for schools. We asked schools in the London area to produce a 10-minute sound tape about the Tower of London, past or present. And the schools who produced the best tapes in the three age categories were presented last weekend with magnificent music centres for prizes. Well, now, here's a chance for you to hear part of these successful entries. And the winners in the under 11 age group were the Dulwich Hamlet Junior School, Dulwich Village, with their entry entitled Sounds of the Tower. And in this excerpt from their entry, we hear some strange stories about the tower, probably unknown to many of us.
This was London Zoo for 500 years until the animals were moved to Regent's Park. We could imagine the lions and tigers and the very first elephant ever seen in this country.
Oh, yes, all comes flooding back now.
It's obviously quite a sophisticated programme in those days.
Yeah, I remember feeling a bit miffed, actually, because they had the presentation ceremony at the Tower of London one Saturday morning, and I was stuck here at LBC doing all the links. I never got into the action at the Tower of London for the prize giving.
Now, better than having the animals in the studio, though. Remember, we had Captain Edward's alligator got loose and his tail kept banging on the wood panelling as he went round the studio.
Actually, you know, Terry Mills is still coming
yes,
in here
I
with
hear
animals,
him. And
not?
Terry Mills brought in, and he never told us what the animal was going to
What's
be.
What's he doing with his animals here overnight?
Well, he's come along one night and find out.
But there was a wonderful moment when he opened a box and this bird-eating spider came out. It was always meant to be a surprise for everybody in the studio, including
Shock.
The presenter. And it was as big as his hand, wasn't it? Do you remember that?
Mm.
And the snakes, he used to bring a lot of snakes.
Yes, and scorpions and things.
Yes, and an owl that once flew round. That wasn't too good in the studio.
No, it was the programme after Jellybone that used to suffer the most, I think, when Terry appeared with his animals.
And the cleaners, I suspect. Yes. Now, in between us sort of getting older, there was another gentleman on Jellybone. Very good. What was his name now? Timmy Lloyd, something like that. Tommy Boyd. Now, I don't know where he is at this... Well, I do know where he is at this very precise moment, but we won't mention that. We'll be hearing from him shortly.
Talk about dumb blondes. You'll think my brains are elsewhere than in my head. I actually believe butter had more calories than margarine. Am I stupid or am I stupid? I was cutting out the butter and spreading something other than. Then my daddy told me all butters and all margarines have exactly the same number of calories. Well, he's not really my daddy, but he treats me real good. So now I'm back on butter, and boy, does it taste swell. Did you know it comes from cows? Take it from an imitation. There's nothing like the real thing.
Hello, hello, hello. That's three. If you can count all the O's in the Perrier commercial in the very next break, you could win a French holiday for two. Pencils ready and off you go. That's four.
It's time for the Jellybone Jury!
Right, that means we listen to three pieces of music by Jonah Louie, by Rage, and also this one, which is from the Pointer Sisters. It's called Slow Hand. Our jury give their comments, marked out of 10, and that gives us the Jellybone Record of the Week. So let's sit back and have a listen to the first one, Slow Hand, from the Pointer Sisters.
Curses, and the chap even got the timing right on that as well. Perfect intro, Mr. Boyd and the Jellybone Jury, sounding terribly sophisticated in those days. Now, we have got some calls on the line, and I'm going to hand it completely over to the jokesters now. So, Therese, if you'd like to talk to Trevor.
Hello, Trevor.
Hello.
Hi. What have you got for us?
Oh, I've got, why don't cats like shaving themselves?
I don't know. Why don't cats like shaving themselves?
10 out of 10 prefer whiskers.
That's a nice one. I haven't heard that one before, have you?
No, very good. Very good.
And you've got some more?
Well, I can't really think of them at the moment.
Oh, I see. They're probably not suitable anyway, Trevor. Thank you very much for that one.
All right. Thank you, Trevor. Simon.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, Simon.
Yeah, hello. Happy birthday.
Oh, that's very nice, isn't it?
That's lovely. Happy birthday to LBC, Simon.
Yes.
Have you got a joke to tell as well?
No, I'm afraid not, but he's never got to have a knock-knock joke, you see.
You've got a knock-knock joke? Did you say you got a knock-knock joke? I'll do a knock-knock to you, if you like.
Yeah, all right.
All right, knock-knock.
Who's there?
Alison.
Alison who?
Alison to Jellybone. It's my only knock-knock, I'm afraid.
What a memory.
What a memory. Perfect, yes. Simon, thank you very much for talking to us. That's Simon in Bonnington. Oh, I'll tell you what, let's get Jean to do the next one, to Tanya. Have we got Jean's little jingle as well? Where's Jean's little...
What's Jean's little jingle?
Jean's little jingle.
You're listening to Jellybone with Jean Davis on LBC.
Tee-hee.
My goodness, it's years since I heard that.
Yes. Tanya.
Hello?
Hello, Tanya.
Hello, we... knock, knock.
Who's there?
Squirmy.
Squirmy who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Granny.
It's Granny, isn't it?
Oh, it's Granny. Granny who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Granny.
Granny who?
Knock, knock.
Granny who?
Aunt.
Oh, who's there?
Aren't you glad I got rid of all those grannies?
Yes.
No, I don't... Therese said you must remember that one, but I actually don't remember that one. I don't think I've ever heard that one before. Is Tanya still there?
Yeah. Yes.
Where did you hear your knock-knock, Tanya?
Well, I heard it all over the place.
At school?
Yes.
How old are you?
10.
At 10? And in... I mean, is that the sort of jokes you tell at school?
Yes.
Have you got any other ones?
No, I can't think of them now.
Well, thanks for ringing in with that.
Bye-bye.
Oh, bye-bye. That's Tanya in Wembley, a 10-year-old on a 10-year-old station. Now, we heard Tommy Boyd earlier on. We've taken a little clip from one of the highlights from his programmes as well. And this is Tommy putting an interesting question to somebody ever so important.
Are you able to get any idea when you talk to them about some of the particular problems that they're facing out there? Obviously, it's very cold.
I mean, something like, what is it, 100 and, minus 120 or something fantastic or more. And they're living in these cardboard houses in the Antarctic winter. And it's no joke, to say the least.
Well, that's Prince Charles obviously talking about the Transpolar Expedition.
Never had him on the Jellybone Jury, did you?
No, we'd like a royal Jellybone Jury one of these days. Now then, we've got a couple of other calls on the line. We'll go to those in a moment. Do I remember somewhere in the dim and distant past a graffiti book, Therese? A Jellybone book of graffiti?
Funny you should mention that.
Talking of...
Clive, yes.
Yes.
It was published 3 years ago, and I'm proud to say that it's still around, actually. Still selling. And that obviously came straight out of Jellybone. We asked kids to phone in and write in with bits of graffiti they found. We had to emphasise that we didn't actually want them to go out and deface the bus shelters. The idea was to collect graffiti rather than create it.
I suppose it must be a bit like in Jean's case. Did people come up to you all the time saying, oh, have you heard this one?
Yes, still do.
Really?
Yes.
And it's still selling?
It is, I'm pleased
Jellybone
to say,
Book
yes,
of Graffiti,
right.
Published by...
Sparrow Books.
Sparrow Books. Yes. And how much will it cost you?
I think it's 95 pence.
95 pence.
A bargain.
That sounds like a bargain indeed, doesn't it? Now, I'll tell you what we ought to do. We ought to deal with this birthday cake. We've got a 10th birthday cake here. Would you like to light the candles, Jean?
Oh, how marvellous. Real candles, real cake. They're not going to be exploding candles, are they?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
this isn't one of your producers' jokes, is it? You know, when I started Jellybone, we didn't have any producers. You just have to sort of somehow get all your guests in by putting on a record and having them sitting in rows on the floor. We didn't have anybody to help us do programmes.
We've got chairs now as well, Jean.
Yes.
We didn't have all this visual display unit. I'm just going to strike another match.
Yes, what happened when callers
When you had a phone call, people used to rush around with a piece of paper with a name on it, and writing was very bad, so you never really knew who anybody's name was.
Did you find that people were fairly tough on the records in the Jellybone Jury?
The older they were, the tougher they were, I think.
Yes, so we once got a crossed line, which I think must be very rare on Jellybone Jury. I don't know if you've ever had a crossed line. Before I light the last match, I'll tell you about the crossed line. And it was... somebody, you know, who came in, not the child who was speaking, said, "No, I think that's absolutely awful."
The record companies do listen, you know. All these top record executives, they love to hear what the real people on the Jellybone jury have to say.
Should we have Therese blow out the last match there? Now, who's going to blow out the...
I suppose the current presenter ought to take
this. I think so. Should we sort of push it across towards...
Yes. Right, okay.
I was going to say push it in his face.
It's the most beautiful...
No, that's next. Oh,
I have to tell you,
lovely,
it's the most beautiful
it?
Blue cake with roses on it, and happy birthday.
There we go. Now all we need is a knife. Everything laid on except the knife. So we'll have to get that a little bit later on. Let's take another call. Andrea is in St Albans. Hello, Andrea.
Hello.
Hello. What do you have for us?
I want to speak to Trace.
Hello, Andrea.
Hello.
Hi.
What, 5 years ago I told you a joke about an elephant. So I tell it again. Do you know it?
I can't remember it, no. Did I laugh the first time?
Well, you didn't understand it.
Ah, let's see if I understand it this time round, then. Right, let's hear it.
Why did the elephant paint his feet red?
I don't know. Why did the elephant paint his feet red?
So he could be seen in the strawberries. So he couldn't be seen in the strawberries.
So he couldn't be seen in the strawberries. Still don't understand it. That was a good one, Andrea. How old are you?
I'm 9.
So you were... 4 years old when you rang in first time?
Yes.
Wow. And you're still listening to Jellybone?
Yes.
That's terrific. Thank you very much for ringing in today. Gosh, that's one of our older listeners, I would imagine.
Mm. Now, Jellybone's always been good for good news rather than bad news. And because the news always tends to be a little bit bad, doesn't it? That's in the nature of it. But one nice thing about Jellybone was that occasionally you went for something really jolly and happy. And we've picked out of the archives a little feature on Jellybone, which was the day that all the good news happened.
News on the hour, every hour from LBC.
Independent radio news at 3, Alan Clark. The Prime Minister was cheered by the Leader of the Opposition this afternoon. Speaking in a debate on a motion of very great confidence, he had to shout to make his voice heard above the applause. In the end, he was so excited by the chorus of "For he's a jolly good fellow" that he had to sit down and accept a gift-wrapped haggis from the leader of the Scottish National Party. The world's biggest cream donut has now been filled with cream and is starting off on its long journey to the world's biggest Beano to be held at the Albert Hall. A giant jelly is being floated here from America, and a super tanker loaded with fizzy lemonade has been donated by the Shah of Iran. Independent fizzy news at a bubble past 3, Alan Clark reporting.
Yes, Alan, I think Clark. That was a Christmas, was it part of a Christmas show?
Mm, yes, well there we are, that wraps up 10 years of Jellybone. Therese and Jean, thank you very much for popping in, nice to have you back in
the
studio.
When do we get the cake, that's what I want to know.
Well, we have that as soon as we get round to the news and the travel news, and the knife will be rushing in, and we can have a bit of that splendid looking 10 years birthday cake for LBC. Now, just as we always do at the end of the half hour, Therese, that book again, Graffiti.
Thank you. Therese Birch's Jellybone book, Graffiti. Thank you.
And it'll cost you 95 pence. Now here's the traffic news.
And traffic's building up in town now. The roadworks on the A40 Western Avenue at the junction with Medway Parade have reduced the road from 3 lanes to 1, and there's a tailback here eastbound right the way to the Greenford roundabout. In Knightsbridge, it's busy because of that resurfacing work between Scotch Corner and Piccadilly Underpass. And out to the west, just south of Heathrow Airport, the A30 Great South West Road is closed for roadworks. Those are going to continue all weekend, and the best alternative route is the A4. Finally, later on this afternoon, there's Grand Prix motorcycle racing at Brands Hatch, so there'll be heavy traffic in the A20 and the on the A20 and the A282 from the Dartford Tunnel. Jane Markham of the AA.
Financial editor Douglas Moffat. It's always interesting to see how external events affect the world's financial markets. Adrian Love's Nightline has led to a massive rise in travel industry shares. Potential mystery guests trying to get out of the country. British Telecom's profits are up due to callers taking part in the various nefarious competitions. But the most interesting influence is in international rubbish futures. With the amount of junk that Adrian, the captain and Knuckles give away every Sunday, Consolidated Tat of Taiwan are 3 points up, and the Call That a Prize You've Got to Be Joking Corporation of Del Rio, Texas, is single-handedly responsible for the fluctuations of the Dow Jones Index. Investors who would like to know just how a three-hour radio programme can influence international commerce are advised to tune to LBC, Sunday night at 10.
Welcome to the Perrier O level contest. If you can count how many times Felicity Kendall pronounces the Perrier O sound after the buzzer, you could win a fabulous holiday for two in southern France. Go.
Hello. When I go to my local bistro for a nice slow meal, the waiter, Joe, knows the only O I go for is Perrier. Anything else is like comparing Pavlova with a go-go dancer. I just won't accept so-so O's. Oh, no, sir. Say no to pseudo-O's and only say hello to the O called Perrier, which only goes to show.
Can you complete Felicity's last line in less than 10 words? Full details on special O-level competition packs of 1 litre Perrier on sale now. Good luck and...
Cheerio. That one doesn't count.
And coming up in the next hour of Jellybone, we'll be hearing about Terrorhawks, the new Gerry Anderson and Christopher Burr creation. On 261 metres, medium wave and 97.3 VHF in stereo, it's LBC and here's the news. Plus, we reveal the Terrorhawks. Terrorhawks, that's the theme from a new programme to come on independent television. You'll probably remember Thunderbirds and Joe 90 and Captain Scarlet and all that kind of thing, that Gerry Anderson creations have moved into a new area. Gerry Anderson and Christopher Burr are bringing us now Terrorhawks. And with me in the studio to tell me more about this is Christopher Burr and Jeremy Hitchin, who's the man behind some of the voices of the characters in the show. First of all, we all know about Super Marionation, which was the original idea back in the Gerry and Sylvia Anderson days. Now you're into something called Super Macromation.
Super Macromation, yes. The techniques used in the latest series are so different from the old shows that we decided we needed to christen it with a new generic term. Super Macromation seemed to be pretty well OTT, and it described some of the amazing advances in puppetry that we hope will be appreciated by the new generation of viewers.
Is it just a name you picked out of the air because it sounds really serious? Or?
Well, I guess it is a name we picked out of the air, but it does to some extent reflect the ideas behind it. And macro, of course, tends to refer to the miniature photography. Super, because it's super. And Asian, perhaps it can be taken from animation. Mm. But the techniques are all so different. The puppets are of a totally new design. They have skin texture. They have moving mouths. They have a whole host of new electronic gadgetry that enables them to move with much more ease and with more lifelike human movements.
Mm. Now, Jeremy, tell us a little bit about the Terrorhawks. I mean, what is the story initially? What is the scene that you set?
Well, according to my research, and I think it was in the year 2017, a very evil lady called Zelda from the planet Guk.
Guk.
It is Guk, isn't it?
Guk, yes. You can say Guk if you like, but it's in the solar system of Alpha Centauri.
Which is pretty heavy going.
And the Terrorhawks are the good guys.
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Einstein was working for the UN, who in fact heads the Terrorhawks. We knew that there was going to be a bit of a problem coming from planet Yuck, Or guck, as it goes.
I think it's actually a tough one for Jeremy to ask. I think you might have better asked me that one.
I think I've got a fair picture of it now. What about some of the characters as well? I mean, you're the guy doing the voices on some of these people, aren't you? Who are you actually responsible for?
Well, Dr. Ninestein himself.
Ninestein. What does he sound like?
I
think you do a bit of overtime here.
Well, Dr. Ninestein is a pretty meaningful guy. Just makes decisions, and he knows exactly what's going on and is permanently on top of each situation as it arises.
And when you're doing that kind of thing, it's presumably not just a matter of being a voice artist, but you I imagine it works around this way. You have to watch the program, do you, and kind of mime along to it?
No, it's all done like we are now, sitting around microphones, and you read through the scripts, because new characters will come up, and depending on the amount of characters that the situation they're brought into, you have to really find a voice that is different to the ones, or very different to the ones that are going on around you. So what we do is sit there and throw around four or five ideas, and then Jerry or Tony, who produces it, will come out and say, yeah, I like that one, go for that. So, you know, we don't know at the time whether it's going to be a male voice or a female voice.
Really? God, that's fascinating. Now, Christopher, I imagine that all this must be a very expensive way of doing it. I mean, you're almost tempted to say, well, why not just use real people in the first place? What do you think the fascination is behind it?
Well, I think you're right. There's often a temptation to wonder why one tries to make a film in which every single item that you see on the screen has to be handmade in varying proportions.
Plus, we reveal the Terrorhawks. Terrorhawks, that's the theme from a new programme to come on independent television. You'll probably remember Thunderbirds and Joe 90 and Captain Scarlet and all that kind of thing, that Gerry Anderson creations have moved into a new area. Gerry Anderson and Christopher Burr are bringing us now Terrorhawks. And with me in the studio to tell me more about this is Christopher Burr and Jeremy Hitchin, who's the man behind some of the voices of the characters in the show. First of all, we all know about Super Marionation, which was the original idea back in the Gerry and Sylvia Anderson days. Now you're into something called Super Macromation.
Super Macromation, yes. The techniques used in the latest series are so different from the old shows that we decided we needed to christen it with a new generic term. Super Macromation seemed to be pretty well OTT, and it described some of the amazing advances in puppetry that we hope will be appreciated by the new generation of viewers.
Is it just a name you picked out of the air because it sounds really serious? Or?
Well, I guess it is a name we picked out of the air, but it does to some extent reflect the ideas behind it. And macro, of course, tends to refer to the miniature photography. Super, because it's super. And Asian, perhaps it can be taken from animation. Mm. But the techniques are all so different. The puppets are of a totally new design. They have skin texture, they have moving mouths, they have a whole host of new electronic gadgetry that enables them to move with much more ease and with more lifelike human movements.
Mm. Now, Jeremy, tell us a little bit about the Terror Hawks. I mean, what is the story initially? What is the scene that you set?
Well, according to my research, and I think it was in the year 2017, a very evil lady called Zelda from the planet Guk.
Guk.
It is Guk, isn't it?
It's Guk, yes. You can say Guk if you like, but it's in the solar system of Alpha Centauri.
Which is pretty heavy going.
And the Terror Hawks are the good guys.
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Einstein was working for the UN, who in fact heads the Terror Hawks. We knew that there was going to be a bit of a problem coming from planet Yuck. Or Guk, as it goes.
I think it's actually a tough one for Jeremy to ask. I think you might have better asked me that one.
I've got a fair picture of it now. What about some of the characters as well? I mean, you're the guy doing the voices on some of these people, aren't you? Who are you actually responsible for?
Well, Dr. Einstein himself.
Einstein. What does he sound like?
I
think you do a bit of overtime here.
Well, Dr. Einstein is a pretty meaningful guy. Just makes decisions, and he knows exactly what's going on and is permanently on top of each situation as it arises.
And when you're doing that kind of thing, it's presumably not just a matter of being a voice artist, but you I imagine it works around this way. You have to watch the program, do you, and kind of mime along to it?
No, it's all done like we are now, sitting around microphones, and you read through the scripts. Because new characters will come up, and depending on the amount of characters that the situation they're brought into, you have to really find a voice that is different to the ones, or very different to the ones that are going on around you. So what we do is sit there and throw around four or five ideas, and then Jerry or Tony, who produces it, will come out and say, yeah, I like that one, go for that. So, you know, we don't know at the time whether it's going to be a male voice or a female voice.
Really? God, that's fascinating. Now, Christopher, I imagine that all this must be a very expensive way of doing it. I mean, you're almost tempted to say, well, why not just use real people in the first place? What do you think the fascination is behind it?
Well, I think you're right. There's often a temptation to wonder why one tries to make a film in which every single item that you see on the screen has to be handmade in varying proportions according to the perspective of the shot. It really is an incredibly painstaking task. I think there's no serious choice. It's a totally unique style of filmmaking, and of course one in which Jerry in particular is I think the supremo.
Does it take an awful long time to come up with a series? I know you're already working on series number two. Is that optimism, or does it just take that long?
Your grapevine obviously works very efficiently here. You mean series number two of Terror Hawks?
Mm.
Ah, right.
oh, why? There's another series, is there, as well?
No, from the way you said that, I thought you may have your spies out in the field. Sorry, I've forgotten the question now.
Right. Well, I was wondering how long it actually takes to come up with a series. Does it take longer going through that process than it would filming a normal series?
Yeah, it's very much longer. Basically, at the beginning of this series, we took a full 6 months in pre-production, which is a very long time, in which we have to make every stick of furniture, all the puppets. There's a very long process in making the puppet heads and getting the faces right, getting the voices to fit the faces, and of course making all the craft. I mean, there's a whole range of fantastic new crafts, spacecraft, earth vehicles, and that took us a full 6 months before we could roll a single foot of film.
Do you have to be very accurate with that? With your spacecraft and the technology, do you have to have in mind that it could in some way actually work?
Well, that tended to be more the case with the old series. We are stressing in this with Terror Hawks that this is into what we describe as space fantasy. It's really not science fiction in the sense that I think a lot of people expect in science fiction that the craft they see on the screen could fly if they were real. That is true with some of the craft, but we do tend to stretch the limits of imagination a little bit in Terror Hawks.
I wonder if we could find out a little more about the personalities and the characters in the series as well. We've heard about Dr. Tiger Ninestein. Who else is involved in this?
Well, there's a whole host of characters, really. The ones that I do, I mean, I think the ultimate character in the programme is really Zelda, who is the main cheese. She's the numero uno who we're fighting against.
It's a cheese. You don't do that one, presumably.
No, I don't.
That one's played by Denise Bryars.
Denise Bryars, who's got together a most fantastic voice. It really is excellent.
Windsor Davis, you've got involved in this as well.
Windsor Davis plays another of, I think, another of the... I'm not quite sure whether to call him a member of the cast or not. Windsor Davis plays the voice of a spherical object.
Good grief.
Who's called Sergeant Major Zero, and he's one of many hundreds of Zeroids, which are spherical robots that come to the assistance of the Terrorhawks in all sorts of amazing situations.
So somebody had to ring up Windsor Davis and say, would you like to play the part of a spherical object?
Something like that. I think Windsor had some trouble identifying with the character at first, but as the series has developed, he really has become quite a star.
Mm. And I dare say, as the series develops, we're also going to see Terrorhawks this and Terrorhawks that, are we?
I'm not sure about this and that, but you may see the odd toy in the shop.
Yes, it's obviously going to be a bit of a hit, judging by the reaction I've heard so far.
Well, we hope so very much.
Well, Jeremy and Christopher, thank you very much for popping in this morning. And we're going to hear another piece of music from the series now. This is SOS. I wonder if you can tell us where this fits in.
Well, one of the cast is a black girl called Kate Kestrel, and she is distinguished by the fact that she wears marvellous, outlandish coloured wigs to suit her clothing. And she, in the series, is a singing star, and so viewers will be entertained by Kate episode after episode with a range of songs, and SOS is the first of those songs that hopefully Kate may even release on record.
And it sounds like this.
To the wind, I feel a restless kind of motion in the way she blows. And as the final day begins, I make a fist of white and fingers till the feeling goes. I never felt so much alone. I face the destiny unknown. The human race is in despair. One man alive can take a stare.
SOS,